On ABC Radio Perth, this is Jeff Hutchison.
This is Asbestos Awareness Week, and we are being reminded that the asbestos cement sheeting that's commonly used in roofs and fences and cladding of older homes across Perth is now at least 30 years old and nearing the end of its life. And such products have been banned since about 2003, and you're again being urged to have it cleaned up as soon as possible by a WorkSafe licensed removalist. Western Australia still has the highest rate of mesothelioma diagnosis in the country, way above the national average. And while that in part is due to the legacy of Whitnoom, we still have broad exposure to asbestos. Well, last week, a national conference on asbestos safety was held in Perth, and one of its key speakers was Dr. Julia Norris, the president of the Australian Institute of Occupational Hygienists. She's my guest on Drive this afternoon. Julia, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Jeff. Thank you very much for having me.
What is an occupational hygienist?
That's a great question, and it's one we get asked often. Occupational hygiene is really the preventative side of occupational health. So a lot of people here have heard the term occupational health and safety, and the focus is really on safety, whereas occupational hygienists focus solely on health. So we are responsible for recognising health hazards in the workplace, evaluating the risks associated with those, and then putting controls in place to really prevent exposure to hazards in the workplace.
Okay. Now, you've worked across a lot of industries: mining, refining, oil and gas, construction, manufacturing, agriculture. Give me your assessment about the greatest dangers that continue to lurk in our workplaces.
Look, I mean, certainly I am an occupational health specialist, so for me my focus is on health. But, you know, so far as I'm concerned, health hazards are actually the greatest risk we face in the workplace, and that's really supported by statistics. So the latest sort of information we have that is, you know, it's probably a little bit of an underestimate, but Safe Work Australia in 2012 suggested that you're 8 times more likely to die from an occupational disease than what you are from an injury at work. And certainly our overseas counterparts tend to collect the data a little bit more robustly. And in the UK, they suggest that for every one worker who dies from an occupational or a workplace injury, there's about 99 that will die from occupational disease.
So are we talking about dust? Are we talking about our lungs?
We're talking about a whole range of occupational diseases. So certainly your lungs are one of those organs that are very highly exposed to hazards in the workplace, because we must breathe. And so we are at risk of breathing in a lot of hazards. So there are occupational asthma, occupational cancers, but there's things like nasal cancer associated with certain exposures, occupational skin disease like dermatitis. And certainly recently there's been a pretty profound link with some of the autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis and exposure to silica, for example. So there are a whole range of diseases that can be associated with hazards.
I want to talk about silica in just a few moments. The focus last week and this week is all about asbestos and how we respond to asbestos. We are under no illusion about the danger of asbestos today. How would you assess the way we respond to it as community, as businesses, as industry and government?
Look, if I had to assess how we respond, I think we're certainly responding in a much more coordinated manner now than we did in history. There's, you know, we have groups like ASIA who do bring together government, patient advocate groups, unions, industry, and I think that's a really important of the way. In the way we respond to all occupational hazards is really getting all of the key stakeholders involved. So traditionally you would have, you know, your legislators sort of promoting their message, and you would have industry groups that were largely either ignorant or you know, unaware. And you would have industry that the actual workers themselves were not really involved in the solution.
So when you think of our awareness of asbestos and asbestos-related diseases like mesothelioma, you know, those rates in Western Australia are still really high, and they can't all be a legacy of Whitnoom all these years later, can they be?
No, certainly not. And the issue with asbestos is twofold. So we have a lot better knowledge of asbestos and asbestos-related diseases in terms of mesothelioma, because really the only thing that causes mesothelioma is asbestos. For a lot of other occupational diseases, we can't say that. So I think there is an awareness out of there of the association between asbestos and asbestos-related diseases. But certainly it's very emotive, and a lot of people get very hyper-vigilant when it comes to asbestos, but that doesn't always translate into industry and into the people who are actually most likely to be exposed.
My guest on the program this afternoon is Dr. Julia Norris, President of the Australian Institute of Occupational Hygienists. This is Asbestos Awareness Week. If there's a question you'd like to ask, 1300 222 720. By the by, Shane has texted in, there's a crash on Beaufort Street in Inglewood. Avoid it if you can. He suggests getting on your preferred rat run. Shane, we can't recommend that people rat run, but that's what people do. If you see something out there this afternoon and it's safe to text us, please do, 0437 922 720. There's also a crash on the Roe Highway. The right lane is blocked southbound at Spencer Road in Thornley. We claim to know the asbestos story reasonably well. We've talked about another wave of deep concerns with asbestos, and that is in the DIY space. So we are more familiar with those things. I want you to tell me a little bit about silicosis, because in the last couple of years, I guess, we've heard very sad recent stories of people working with stone dying from silicosis. Is there something to be learnt with this issue as there was with asbestos?
Oh, very much, and there's a lot of similarities in the story. So silicosis has been well known in Australia for well over 100 years. The turn of the century, it was quite prominent in miners and tunnel workers, and there was a lot of effort put in through the middle part of the last century in terms of ventilation regulations and controls to really reduce exposure. And we really thought we actually had control of that. We thought silicosis was becoming a disease of the past, and then all of a sudden in the last couple of years we've had a sudden emergence. And unfortunately, you know, with the asbestos, you know, they closed down mining, they banned the use of it, they banned the import, yet we're still seeing this legacy carry on. And it's popping up in other industries like DIYs and removal and those sorts of things. And similar with silicosis, you know, we focused on the mining industry, we focused on people who were using those traditional methods, and we lost sight of the fact that it was a whole emerging industry that were being exposed to silica.
Okay. So what are we not getting right? You know, when you talk about silicosis having been a disease of another time, why has it emerged? I understand everyone wants their stone-like bench tops, but is it some kind of customer demand that has made the product so appealing that shortcuts are being taken?
Look, I don't know if shortcuts have been taken, but certainly there's been a rapid growth in the building industry, which has coincided with the rise in popularity of engineered stone. So traditionally, natural stone is difficult to work with. You need very highly skilled people. It needs sealing. It needs maintenance. It's prone to cracking and staining, whereas the engineered stone benchtops are strong. They're super durable. They don't need any maintenance. They don't scratch. They don't stain. So obviously they've become very popular, and they don't need a particularly skilled workforce to work with them. So you've got people who traditionally didn't work with stone and haven't learnt about the hazards associated with it. They were carpenters, cabinet makers, and they have got into the stone industry because of the demand. But unfortunately, they haven't had the training and the education around what they're dealing with and the hazards associated with it.
So that becomes sort of really important adjunct to a conversation about asbestos, doesn't it? Because there are other industries where we look to be perhaps making the same mistakes, would you think? Or is there just a good opportunity to learn, Julia?
Look, I think it's an opportunity to learn, because in this case, as with the asbestos, I think there's lots of people who had small pieces of the puzzle. So certainly occupational hygienists have known about silica and silicosis for many, many years, as have the occupational physicians and its association with silicosis. And certainly the manufacturers of the engineered stone are very much aware that the stone contains upward of 90% silica. The people working with it on the ground floor are aware that they're dry cutting and creating great clouds of dust. But it appears that nobody's really brought all of that information together to predict that this was going to be an issue. And unfortunately, once again, we've relied on the emergence of disease in workers before we've stood up and taken notice. Similar with asbestos, you know, it really took people to become very unwell and basically workers to die before we stood up and said, hang on, we need to pay attention.
On the Drive program, Dr. Julia Norris is my guest. I'll just get you to pop your headphones on, Julia. Peter's got a question. Peter, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Jeff. Good afternoon, Julia.
Hello.
Hi.
What's your question, Peter?
My question is, I own a house which I am not renting out. I bought it more than 20 years ago, and when I bought it, I didn't know there was asbestos in the wet areas. That came to my attention when I had to get a plumber in to do some work on the piping that was in the wall. And that's when he told me, did you know that? And I said, no, I didn't. So now that the house is being rented out, is there any danger to the tenant or anyone else with the house in its present condition?
Look, you've mentioned the key word there, and that's condition. So, and also awareness. So, the key to managing asbestos is knowing that it's there. So, if you're aware that the asbestos is there, if you have to do any maintenance or disturb that at all, then obviously you need to take really strong precautions in accordance with all of the regulations and guidelines. But if you don't know it's there, that's when people come unstuck and get inadvertent exposure. And the other word you mentioned was condition. So it's really important that the asbestos is, there's no way it can be disturbed and that the fibres can become airborne. So if the asbestos is in good condition, the fibro sheeting, if that's the form that it's in, is painted and sealed, and there's no wear and tear, then the risk of exposure is minimal unless it's disturbed.
Thank you
very much for that, Peter. And I imagine there are Peters all over metropolitan Perth with those kind of questions, and this obviously does matter. The advice from WA Health today is that all asbestos roof sheeting is removed and safely disposed of by WorkSafe licensed asbestos removalist. Cement products are now controlled waste. They must be wrapped, transported and disposed of in an approved manner. Our local government websites will provide you with some information about how and where to dispose of asbestos cement products. Julia, do you have a concern that this situation will deteriorate further? Are these really important times for good messaging about silicosis and asbestosis?
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely the potential for things to deteriorate and for more people to be exposed. And obviously with these diseases, we're often not seeing the result of that for many, many, many years. So it is important that people understand where asbestos may occur, where silica may occur, and how to identify that and how to manage it if they need to remove it. Because in this day and age, so obviously with asbestos, we're still not installing it, but there is a big program of removal and renovation. And I've raised that issue with silicosis as well, because even though it's emerging and we're spending a lot of effort on controlling exposures now, which is fantastic, but we have a whole generation of people out there with engineered stone benchtops. And unfortunately, we are creatures of fashion. And in 15-20 years' time, when engineered stone is, you know, to coin a phrase, so yesterday, and people are looking to the new engine or their new stone benchtop and they want to remove their kitchen, what happens with demolition? So, you know, if you watch popular television and DIY shows, they basically take to it all with a sledgehammer.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they're starting to do that with these products that contain 90 to 95% silica, then we'll start to see, as we have with asbestos and asbestosis and mesothelioma, that second wave of exposure that's coming around from the demolition of engineered stone products.
A really significant warning, and we are all non-notice, really, because we are being told about these things. Really good chat, Julia. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Julia Norris, she's a GP. She's also president of the Australian Institute of Occupational Hygienists and was a keynote speaker at the National Asbestos Safety Conference. You're with Jeff. This is Drive. And this is Archie Roach with a bit of help from Paul Kelly, the song Rally Round the Drum.